Ready? Meeting starting again. Right, welcome back everyone. I'd like to introduce our fifth old timer, Sonia from Tuesday Night Beaconsfield.
I'm Anne.
Sorry.
Same meeting,
I was really. Anne from our Tuesday Night Beaconsfield. And Stafford Jim was apparently the first old timer you came across in a meeting in Stafford on a Monday and a Thursday. And Stafford Jim introduced AA to the Potteries in 1962, so a bit of AA history there. And really over to you, Anne. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name's Anne, and I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me? Is that all right? Yes, I could never do a chair and not be slightly nervous. So I always ask my higher power to speak through me and help me to remember the important things. And for me, the most important thing is just for today to stay sober. And it wasn't just alcohol. I needed to stay sober emotionally and spiritually. But that will never be perfect. It's going to be progress, not perfection. And if I look back at my drinking early, I will give you a little of that because it's a long time, an hour, isn't it? I'll try and make it shorter. Anyway, I always loved drink. I loved family weddings and christenings and funerals because I loved sitting on my auntie's knee and having a little sip of her drink. I remember thinking, this is really nice. And I liked, with my uncles, I didn't like it if they had a shandy. I knew very early that a beer was much better. Had more effect. And for one so fairly young, 6, 7, 8, I knew immediately that alcohol did the trick, and I had good feelings when I'd had some. And then I grew up, and I went to a convent, and quite a lot of convent girls, I think we break out or something happens. I've met a lot of convent girls in AA, surprisingly, but I went to a convent, and then I had my first boyfriend, if you like, and I decided that baby sham was good. I don't know if anyone remembers that little deer that hops around, and baby sham was, I loved it. I thought it was sophisticated and everything. And then I heard of Flying Angels, and that was baby sham with a brandy in it. that was too much, because I didn't like to be completely out of control. I remember that feeling of I needed to be a good girl. You know, those sort of comments were important, because I grew up to be a good girl. And it's amazing how my alcoholism eroded any principles I had. You know, very, very slowly as the illness progressed, I became less and less like the little girl, the young girl I was originally. And, you know, that's one of the sad things about alcoholism. Another of the sad things is the concern and fear it creates in my family. For instance, when I married, and I was very spontaneous. You know when it says think on the wall? Well, I never thought. I just jumped. And I met this gentleman who said, I'm being posted to Hong Kong as the young sales manager. And I'd had 8 dates with him. And in those days, dates meant you went to a cinema, you went out for dinner, you maybe went to a dance. You certainly didn't, well, not in my field, live with them or anything like that. Complete sort of naivety, but I thought Hong Kong sounded exciting. And so I said yes. And my sister was getting married as well at that time, and we had a double wedding. And, you know, that was really special and quite exciting. And because I was I can see my alcoholism, you know, the bit of drama, you know, nothing too ordinary. It had to be black or white. Grey was awful, you know, that grey in the middle. But my drinking became grey. It became very sad and grey and miserable. But Hong Kong was brilliant for a budding alcoholic. Because, you know, Sonia shared how when you're abroad, you don't hesitate to have a drink at 10 in the morning, and people don't raise an eyebrow if you ask for one. And I remember I was one of the lucky ones, well, lucky or unlucky. I could make the coffee when everyone else was looking under the weather. And I remember thinking, why don't those women, you know, behave like ladies? Well, you know, I was to behave very, very much unlike a lady, but I'd be making the coffee because I could somehow handle quite a lot of drink in the early days and not get drunk. I know that's true because I was aware of everything that was happening and I didn't actually have hangovers. So I was one of those people for whom alcohol seemed to be no problem. And, you know, the denial there was physical, mental, you know. And I used to think my husband was a bit mean. And when we came back from Hong Kong, we'd saved. And we'd saved for our little home. And he said, now, I'm going to buy some drink, but it's only for my colleagues. Because he was very ambitious, you know, and if he, anyone came to the house, especially if it was someone to do with his work, he always wanted to offer them a drink. But as we drank a lot in Hong Kong, he said, that's finished now. You don't drink. Don't say that to an alcoholic. I remember he bought some Harvey's Bristol cream. I'll never forget that. And he said, that's for, you know, any of the wives of any of my colleagues who call. And my mother came for lunch, and I thought, blow that. And I offered them sherry, you know, Harvey's Bristol cream. And I mean, I had God knows how many. And I looked at the bottle, and I thought, oh my goodness, it's gone right down. So I talk about trouble. I took ages to steam off the label and lower it. So it looked better, you know, it took me ages. And I smoothed it on and everything. And then if my husband looked, he wouldn't see that, you know, that I'd done that really. But he was wise early. You know, my husband was very aware of what was going on. In a strange way, he said, I find the way you drink very embarrassing. You don't just sip, you glug and it's gone. And I said, well, you know, that's how I drink. You know, it's I'm perfectly all right. And because I was still handling it reasonably well and not getting drunk at the time, I thought, what is he complaining about? You know, it was just when my children came along, my son and daughter, the illness progressed because I continued to drink. I didn't drink while I was pregnant, which is a miracle. And that, you know, that for me, I'm very grateful because I don't know what might have happened. They would have had withdrawals as babies, maybe, you know, which you hear about, that sort of thing. Anyway, didn't drink while I was pregnant, but I drank then afterwards. And my son, who was 10 when I stopped drinking, before that became my little carer. And he used to say, don't drink any more of your Coca-Cola, Mummy. You know, it makes you drive funny. And, you know, I mean, part of me didn't want to hear that. But, you know, at the same time, he was true. It was true, very much true. My little daughter was 5 years younger and just listened. And it's quite sad in a way because when I stopped drinking, I asked my son, I said, what do you remember about Mummy's drinking? And he said, what was the worst thing? What do you think's the saddest thing? And he said, when you ran over my go-kart. Because I reversed over his go-kart, he could have been in it, you know. Oh. And then to my little daughter, I said, can you remember anything? She was only 5 when I stopped. She said, I used to feel lonely, Mummy, because you were there, but I felt lonely. And of course, I wasn't there emotionally. I was there physically, but I wasn't in any condition to be really there. As you know, by the grace of God, since I've been sober, I've been able to be there. And that's AA. Anyway, my drinking progressed. I went to my doctor. He gave me lots of pills. You know, if he said, now you just take 2 of those in the morning, and then that's it. And I'd take 2, and then by 11 o'clock, I think, he just said, that's it. He didn't say, have any more. And I'd drink, and then I'd take 2 or 3 more, and then I'd have so much that I think, I can't remember whether I took any anyway. So I had my stomach pumped quite a few times. You know, I arrived at the hospital, and there we are. That was a horrible experience. But it still didn't register completely. I knew there was very much something wrong, but I could blame it on my marriage, I could blame it on so many things and not my illness, because I didn't even know I had an illness. And, you know, I remember one time, I think probably the worst thing, I do remember some of that, I put my pills in a mug, and they were the kind that capsules that you pull them apart and the granules go into the mug. Pour boiling water on it and then scrunched it down and drank it. And I was like a maniac, you know, bouncing off walls. When I hear people say, I bounced off walls, that's exactly how, what happened for me. And my husband called an ambulance, and they had to put me in a straitjacket. And I can't picture myself in a straitjacket today. You know, it's how we change and the miracle of change. But I was in this straitjacket, and I was, and I had to sit in this chair while they carried me down the stairs to the ambulance. And I remember shouting, you know, bastards, you know, and words that I didn't know I knew, you know. I mean, really awful. And my husband put his hand over my mouth. And when I came around the next day, the psychiatrist said, why did you do it? Did you want to die? And I said, no, I wanted to be happy. They were antidepressants, but you had to wait 24 hours. You know, I didn't want to wait 24 hours. You know, the insanity, total insanity. And anyway, not that long after that, we moved a lot. My husband was ambitious. I think he was a workaholic. Well, I know he was. And his ism was alcoholism, and mine was alcohol. And whatever. Anyway, we moved. I was married for 18 years and I had 13 homes, and that's a lot of moving. And every time he thought things would be better, and every time I took my illness with me, you know, I didn't. And the last time I moved, well, I'll just get to my end. I'm just going to tell you mostly about me, but then I want to tell you how AA's worked for me and what the miracles of AA. And, you know, we moved finally to Stafford. And, you know, I was very ill then, and another overdose. And, you know, it was just chaotic and sad and really sick. And I knew that, I don't know what I knew. I think maybe I knew with my head that I should stop drinking, but I wasn't sure. And I had, my son was 10 and he had roller skates for his birthday. And I'd had quite a lot to drink, needless to say, quite a lot of whiskey that day. And I never drank whiskey. I used to think, as so many people do, vodka doesn't smell. It comes out of your pores when you drink too much, you know, and it's that sickly sweet smell, and that's awful. But anyway, I put on his roller skates. I said, I can roller skate. I think I'd roller skated last when I was about 13. And I put them on, and I skated, like, that very relaxed feeling when you've just had enough. And I floated round the patio, and I flouted up the path, and Peter, my son, said, Mummy, you're brilliant. You can really skate. And I couldn't remember that I could really skate, but I did then. And then I fell, and I broke my arm, and all the bones stuck out. And it was a really bad fracture. But because I was so anaesthetised, I didn't remember it was that bad. Anyway, a next-door neighbour called an ambulance, and I had it set. And the next morning I came round, because they had to do an operation to set it, an anaesthetic. He said, the specialist said, you didn't need very much anaesthetic. I thought, I'm not surprised, it was very bad. And the next morning I came round, and he said, why did you want to do it? And I said, I just wanted to be happy, and I just wanted to show my son that I could skate. And he said, well, you're very sick, you know. And he said, I want you to put this lid on this pen, and you've got to join up. You have to do that because if you couldn't do that, you're insane. And I thought, what a strange thing. And I was amazingly able to put the lid on the pen, you know. And I've never heard of that before or since. But anyway, that's what I did. And then I had my arm in plaster, and for 4 or 5 weeks, it was going to come off on the 6th week. And, you know, it was just like a slow toothache. I would drive to the off licence and get a bottle. And nothing dramatic happened. No more quarrels, no more, you know, no more difficult things in the same way, no dramas. And then my sister came for lunch, and she looked at me with tremendous love and compassion. And I still feel emotional when I say that, because something inside, it was like it collapsed or snapped, and I was totally beaten. And I knew that I found myself saying, please, can you help me? I can't stop drinking. And she went straight to the telephone, and she'd been to the dentist a few weeks before, and in Reader's Digest at the dentist, there was an article about Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank God it was in the directory. And this man came on the phone, and he said, I'd like to speak to the person with the problem. And he said, my name is Clinton, and I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, fancy saying that to a stranger. But, and you know, something inside me had a little tiny flutter of hope. And he said, do you want to stop drinking? And I said, oh, yes, please. He said, that's the best thing you could have said. And I don't know why I said it, don't know. I just know I was beaten. And he said, there's a meeting tonight in at the Stafford. It's a Quaker Hall opposite the General Hospital. And, you know, it starts at 8 o'clock. My husband got home from work. My sister rang him. And he went round the blocks. He thought, she'll definitely not go into the Quaker Hall, because next door to a pub. And the Quakers probably came in and tried to save the people in the... I don't know, but I mean, I know that he was scared that I'd go over the wall into the pub, because that would have been the old me. But he came all the way round, and I went through the door. And it was one of those big Gothic doors, you know, with big black metal bolts and handles and everything. And I remember opening it, and it creaked open, and sitting opposite on a chair, as soon as I was, this man with a big black beard, a cross between Jesus Christ and Rasputin. That's what I thought. And I thought, oh my God, you know. And but I didn't care. I knew that I just needed whatever was there. I had no idea. And they were all men. There weren't any women. You know, it was, this is, I'll say that my last drink was 11 a.m. on Monday, the 28th of April, 1974. And that's a total miracle, because they say, do remember the date if you can. I mean, some people are so blurred, they can't remember anything, but I do remember that. That was very clear for me. And I went into the room, and, you know, it was a kind of room where the kettle steamed and the water ran down the walls, and you snagged your tights on the chairs because they were wooden ones with lots of splinters, and I couldn't care less. I just knew somehow I was home. And then I saw the things on the wall, you know, I saw these things, and I saw the word God, and I thought, oh, I've tried God. I went to a convent, and when I was 16, Billy Graham came to a town near where I lived, and I was saved every day. You know, I was so emotional. I think I suffered from emotionalism. You know, it was all, this is wonderful. Oh, I love God. I love Jesus. I love, you know. And then they said, well, come to our Bible readings. And I thought, oh, yes, I will. And I shared that I was going to a party that night. I was going to have lots of baby sham. And they said, oh, we'd rather you didn't drink. And I mean, you know, I don't know why they said that. And I thought, funnily enough, I didn't go there again. You know, I look back and think, why did I just didn't go there again. But I felt I'd tried God. And then I heard that it was God as you understood him. And, you know, I found my own understanding of God. And I knew that I had to be very tolerant of other people's understanding of God. And it opened my mind to being, you know, less rigid and much freer in you know, with all the different people who came to meetings. It didn't matter what nationality or what God they had, that was their higher power. And mine was a friend, but very mixed with lots of, well, I can't even describe it, it just shows. And then I, because there were no women there, I asked the man with the beard, because he seemed the most sober, if he would be my sponsor. And I know we now say women for women and men for men, but he looked so old, and you know, I didn't think I was old. I thought I was fairly young, and he wasn't that old now. I think, good heavens, he was only in his 60s, and now I'm, well, whatever, you know, I knew, say anymore, but you know, but he was excellent for me. He really used to say, if you want to know how not to do it, come to me. Because he said, I've made so many mistakes. And it was, you know, his mistakes really helped me. I mean, one or two things happened, and he said, oh, I tried that, and this happened. I thought, I don't want that to happen to me. And I learned from his experience the good things, the wonderful things that I think he did. He had a great compassion for people. And we went on our first 12-step call, and it was a young woman, well, woman, I don't know what age, and she'd got a little baby, and she'd been in and out of AA, in and out. And he took me on my first 12-step call, and he took a bottle of decent sherry. And I thought, wonder what, we're not going to have a drinks party, are we? You know, I didn't know quite what was going to happen. And he said, hello, Jane, whatever her name was. It wasn't Jane. He said, if you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, it's ours. And you can ring any time. And I thought, that is so, you know, how unusual. And she'd never been given permission to drink. They'd always poured a drink away, threatened her, told her, you know, that she... And he had a sort of wisdom. And she's still my friend and sober today, which I find wonderful. We send each other Christmas cards. And, you know, we don't contact so much on the phone, but the fact that we can be in touch. And, you know, she was someone for whom that worked. It wouldn't work for everyone. And before I was ready to stop, I'd have thought, yippee, you know. I know I would, because that's how I was. Anyway... we moved again, having been sober for some time in Stafford. And I was really sad to move because I felt that, you know, I'd found recovery in lovely people. I'd made some good friends, and very slowly, even I 12-stepped a little. But, you know, they say you need to have a bit more. But Bill W. and Dr. Bob, 12-step people, when they'd very little time between them, I just knew what had happened to me. And that's what I was told to do. Just tell them what happened to you. And, you know, if they identify, then that could help. And show. But hit them with the illness and then show them the recovery. Because reducing ego at depth, you know, there are all these sort of quotations. And, I found I helped. There were two ladies. In fact, I went to my doctor and I said, "Have you got anyone who might have a drink problem? Because I'm getting lots of help from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've not had a drink now for 3 months, and that's a miracle because I couldn't stop for a day." And he said, "Well, I actually have one lady, you know, who's very unhappy and would love an answer." And he said, "I'll see." You know, anyway, he gave me her telephone number, and I shared what had happened to me and how I was being helped. And I drove. I had a little DAF. It's drive belt, and it's like a milk float. You know, it winds up the road. I mean, people always knew when I was coming home, late or early, thought, that woman. and it wind up the road, you know, to pick up this lady. And she said, "I've got to bring my friend. I can't..." And she drinks like me anyway, you know. Well, I mean, it's not for me to say who's the alcoholic, but we used to get there. But unfortunately, I was often a little bit late, you know, and they'd come in and we'd sit on the back row. They'd sit on the back row, and sometimes she was in a very bad state. And I realised then, my old sponsor said, "I think you're carrying the alcoholic, not just the message. And you need to, you know, back off a little and give them the opportunity to get themselves there now that they know where it is." And that felt really hard. You know, it felt difficult to do, but I knew the wisdom of it. You know, I knew that it was wise, because I became a little taxi service and a you know, a marriage guidance counsellor and everything else. You know, I was forgetting that I'm just an alcoholic. And, you know, I was... That was where I was. Anyway, we finally moved to this area, to Amersham, Beaconsfield, Rickmansworth. I'm called Ricky Ann, not because I'm rickety, but because I live in Rickmansworth, and it's a shortened version for Rickmansworth, yes. And, you know, I was really upset because I'd need to leave my old sponsor, whom I didn't depend in an extreme way, but I knew how helpful he was, and I didn't know what it would be like in this area. And, you know, a Share magazine came out, and it had little stars on the front. It had a map and little stars to say where there were AA meetings. And I thought, that is incredible. There was Amersham, and I went to Amersham on a Thursday, because I went to Stafford Monday and Thursday. That was all the meetings there were. There was no chance to do 90 and 90. It was very, very different. You know, they were sparse and not many around. And in fact, my old sponsor used to hitchhike to meet his sponsor, who was a lady doctor, just GM. That's her name. Nobody, really anonymous. And he used to hitchhike, you know, on big lorries, anything, and go to London, where she was, and have a share with her and do the steps, and then hitchhike back again. And he said, "If I want to make as much effort with my sobriety as I did with getting a drink, then that's important to me." Now, I realise I can't hitchhike, you know, all over the place, because there is a point at which it's dangerous. But, you know, by the grace of God, I have had lifts and do get lifts from lovely friends and really appreciate it, because I don't drive now. I have a condition with my spine that if I press the brake, it hurts so much I have to push the brake down with my knee. And I thought, I've used up my 9 lives drink driving, and if I drive now with that sort of condition, it's just so irresponsible. And so I didn't. But then I got to this area and Beaconsfield, I met Sonia, and that was wonderful. And I met lots of other lovely sober people. And it's funny how when you first get sober, you think this is the only place where it's any good. And we're all, you know, I mean, not we're all, but lots of us can feel very committed to our first group. And I still love it. I can still look back with great fondness that it was there. And yet the secretary had been a secretary for 6 years. There was nobody, somebody did prisons, went in every now and again, but not regularly. And almost, you know, there was almost, and certainly no one doing them, you know, in the intergroup doing money or anything. It was, none of those actions were available in that area. But I didn't know about that. Didn't know about rotation. I didn't know about lots of the things that were going to, you know, that would keep the groups going. And it's still going after all these years. 41 years later, Stafford is getting people well. And it's there for them. And that's what I love. You know, it's the people and the communicate and the identification, not feeling alone anymore. That for me has been so special. I'm looking at that clock. Yes, well, now, what has AA done for me, and what is AA? What do I know about AA? Well, my first convention was at Selsey, which was, you know, a lovely convention, and I drove there by myself because I heard that it was very friendly, and it was on the south coast, and the room was smaller than this room, and it was packed with people, you know, such enthusiasm. We almost were sitting on each of people's knees, and there was a little dance floor, and it was so crowded. I don't know whether anyone ever went to Selsey, but it was eventually, because of the fire situation, they had to, you know, they said, it's not safe, we have to move. And so the next convention was at Camber Sands. No, Brighton. Brighton, yes. It was at Brighton in a very posh hotel and everything. And some people stayed in caravans and some people camped and some people stayed in the hotel. But it was too much, you know, those who can afford it, those who can't. It was made AA too different. And so we went to Camber Sands and stayed there for a long time. And that was a lovely convention. You know, I learned a lot there, and I did, you know, helped in various things. Sonia, I shouldn't keep talking about you, sorry, dear. Oh, I'm breaking your anonymity. It's very hard not to talk about someone you're fond of, isn't it? Especially when you share from, you know, where I am sharing. Anyway, people did, you know, did a lot. There was lots of enthusiasm, and it really was a you know, to see people dancing. There's a lovely friend of mine, Herbie, and Herbie always used to wear this wig with sort of silver tinfoil all hanging down, and he was never off the dance floor. And I thought, imagine all of us, you know, in this place, nobody drunk and actually having fun. And, you know, that sort of laughter and everything was very uplifting, because I did think, I'm afraid there's not going to be much fun now. You've got to be very sober and very proper and all that sort of thing. And you know, that wasn't like that. It was, you know, in fact, there were situations that were really quite outrageous. And I think Sonia was sharing how at Beaconsfield the secretary would call out names, you know, and there was a lovely secretary, a friend of mine, I'm not going to say names, but she was quite a character. And there's one member who's also quite a character. It's difficult without names, but never mind. And the character's sponsor said, don't go on quite so long, you know, you've spent a lot of time, you know, waffling on, and other people need a chance. So this person, the secretary, said, and would you like to share so and so? And he said, yes, my name's so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've been told not to talk so long. And immediately the secretary said, thank you, Andy, thank you, and stopped him just like that. I can't do it without the name, can I? Well, never mind. Sorry, that's a bit. You can tell I'm wearing thin. What time? I'm a bit short sighted. Is it nearly 5:30? Yes. God, I've never shared for this long before. Usually it's a sort of half an hour at the most, but maybe it's okay. You know, I must get serious now. Let's think. I'm trying to think of, yes. Oh, I know. Doing service, that's been a very important part for me. I've done the usual things. I loved emptying the ashtrays, you know, when we used to smoke, because I was all or nothing. I mean, I smoked 40, 50 a day. And for me to clean the ashtrays was jolly good. It was, you know, and by the grace of God, I managed to stop. It's not about stopping smoking in AA, but I managed to stop when I'd been sober 7 years. And if I hadn't, because my father died of emphysema and heart trouble really badly, and I got to the top of the stairs and saw my face looking breathless, and I thought, oh please, you know, I needed to ask my higher power to help me, and I did, and it did happen. But I put down the cigarettes and picked up the biscuits, you know, so not very good at being pure. But that's how it is sometimes. Anyway, where was I? You were brilliant the way you kept going. I'm fizzling out. Let's see, just a second. Service, yes, that's right. I did the usual things. I wasn't secretary of Beaconsfield, which, you know, is one of those things, but I became a prison sponsor in the prisons. And, you know, I found that really rewarding. It was young lifers between 18 and 22. And there were some who were the same age as my son by then. And I used to hear them, you know, sharing not what they did, but how they felt about alcoholism and how they desperately needed help. And I remember once I got there late and I apologised. I said, I'm so sorry I was late. The traffic was awful. And one lad said, nobody apologises to shit like us. And I said, you will be treated with love and respect in AA. You're going to be treated, you know, you will have apologies if appropriate. And don't ever think that if you get to AA when this time here is over, that you won't be treated with love and respect. And he said, really? He said, I can come out if I behave well. I said, well, you know, it was awful. He was 18 and he had his 18th birthday party. He had a lot to drink, a tremendous amount to drink. And his friends took him to a football match, and then he had a party in the evening. And it was in a hall. And some men gatecrashed it. They were drunk as well. And they were turned out, you know, and the party went on, and he got more and more sloshed, but he was functioning. And when he came out, he was set upon by these lads, and a fight ensued, a real nasty fight, you know. It really was very fierce, and it was awful. And he got back to his home, and he sort of half collapsed, his glasses were broken, and about a quarter of an hour later, the police knocked at the door, and they said, we're arresting you for murder. You were seen kicking this man in the head. And, you know, I mean, he doesn't remember that. He doesn't remember anything about it. And he went to Aylesbury Prison for, I don't know how long, but, you know, obviously the circumstances were difficult, but he was there. And 6 months after he got there, his father died of a heart attack. And, you know, I felt such compassion for him, because there but for the grace of God go anyone. And my son, who's now 50, is an alcoholic, you know. He's desperately needs AA. But I had a birthday, big celebration, when I was 40 years sober, and he came. And he'd had to have 7 pints to come. He couldn't come without a drink, because he knew he wouldn't be drinking there. And And people were really nice to him. Well, there wouldn't be anything else, would they, really? And one said, you're Anne's son, aren't you? And he said, yes. You know, and I thought, he'll deny it. And he didn't. He said, yes, I am. And this person said, you've got her brown eyes. And he told me this. He said, Mum, they were really, and they were young ones. I couldn't get over it. I thought they were all old like you. Although, I mean, he's met my friends, some of whom are younger, but, you know, he didn't realise. And it was sort, I felt, this is attraction rather than promotion. You know, we say that, don't we? Rather than, and I know the best way to 12-step a family member is to enjoy your own recovery. And I've certainly enjoyed mine. I do. I'm so grateful that, you know, that I'm able to be sober, and that with the love and friendships in AA, and the tough things, you know, that haven't always been easy things. And AA itself has had struggles at time. But, you know, as long as most of us are pro and look out, you know, for, they won't go into the traditions and everything, because I know they were beautifully shared about yesterday. But, you know, there are lots of things in the traditions that are very wise. And, you know, and certainly the steps of something to live by. And I know, you know, occasionally I've got to go into a situation and I'm really nervous. I don't know what to say. And I say, please, God, can you speak through me? And I find myself saying such sensible things. I think, where did that come from? But, you know, and I think, I must try that. You know, I mean, it's really helpful. And you know, it's only because I'd said a prayer and asked God to help me that I ever found, you know, that kind of help. And when I had to go to my children's school, you know, and discuss their thing, because I must have had that my husband did find an air stewardess on a business trip and then said, I want a divorce. And within 6 weeks, we were divorced, the quickest divorce, because he was very spontaneous, like marrying me, you know, 9 dates and we married, and it was very similar. And, you know, I felt half relieved, because however hard I was trying to make amends, it didn't work very well. And in fact, you know, I used to make sure the children were all ready for bed with the stories read and his meal on the table. It was very primitive in those days. You know, the little woman, none of this partnership stuff, you know, it was. And he said, I hope you're going to wash up after the thing so we can start the morning nice and tidy. And I thought, why don't you wash up the things? And it's your job, you know. But he was angry still about my alcoholism. I know where he was coming from, but I went to the meeting and I shared. I said, I'm so frustrated because I'm blowed if I'm going to wash up when I've made the meal, blah, 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 you know, whinged on a bit. And this lovely man, we call him Charlie, he worked on the dustbins and he was so wise. He said, why don't you wash up and just to say thank you to God for your sobriety? And I got home and I won't go to bed now without washing up. It took me 3 minutes, 5 minutes. It was only a plate and a mug and knife and fork. You know, it wasn't a great big pile of stuff. And it was all lovely and tidy. And he said, oh, about time. And I thought, don't say I didn't do it for you. I did it for my higher power to say thank you. I wasn't going to say that because then it would spoil it, wouldn't it? You know, I wanted to, but that wouldn't be the wise thing. And now I look and I think I'm really quite sad for him in lots of ways, because he's now on his fourth marriage. He's still looking for Miss Perfect. And that's really sad, you know. And I've had 36 happy years of freedom. That's awful, isn't it? I do. I see happily married people and I think, oh, that's lovely. But it wasn't. And my sister's happy. And, you know, I mean, there are lots of people who suffered from alcoholism and had lovely marriages afterwards. But, you know, in my case, it didn't happen. But, you know, I look back and I did have times to make amends. Was so glad that I managed to do that. I had 2 years before he met the air stewardess and I was a different person. And he used to say to the children, I don't know what your mother's, what's she getting at that place? He said, I don't recognise her. This is what he said. She's not like that woman I'm married, you know, because I was quite firm, but I wasn't. Oh, well, I don't know. Never mind. It doesn't really matter what I was like. I was trying to work the program and do the steps and everything. I don't think I can manage till 4 o'clock. I'm really waffling now. Do you want any more little anecdotes? It's like my intellect has gone kaput.
Say another prayer.
Oh, all right, then. I thought of one or two things that I thought were lovely things that Sonia said, you know. Yes, yes. Service and sponsorship. That's something I have loved doing, is have sponsees. I've got one sponsee and I've been her sponsor for 36 years. And she and I, well, she sponsors me. You know, each, and whoever's got the crisis or the difficulty, we help each other. And it's like you have a history when you've been a friend to someone, or call it a sponsor, you know. And it's very special. You know, I love that. I love that part. And my children, my daughter's happily a partner. She's not yet married, but she's got two gorgeous little girls, and she lost four babies, and that was very hard and very sad, and there were lots of prayers then. But the little girls who have come along are lovely. And then there's my son, and he's got I've got two grandsons with him, and they're lovely boys. You know, I'm really grateful. And in fact, years ago, I had my eldest grandson to stay, and he was, you know, up to the age of five, and we used to have great fun. I must admit, I still love playing. You know, the immaturity is still there, but it's lovely with a child, you know, because I really enjoyed it. But unfortunately, he would go home and say to his mother, oh, I like living with Granny. She's much more fun than you lot, you know, which is not very good. And eventually she said, I'm not having it. You're not having him anymore. He's very spoilt when he comes to you. And I thought, oh no. And I didn't have him anymore. But 4 months, 5 months ago, I had a phone call. And in between, I have had young lodgers, because when my house was empty and the children, you know, my daughter went to uni and my son lived with his girlfriend, then it was all quiet and dull, you know, and tidy. And I like it tidy, but, you know, it really was difficult. And so I had my first lodger, and it was a young deputy head of a local school. And then I met another, the next one, and I 12-stepped the parent of two of them. Both were alcoholics. And, you know, one of them said, I lost my dad. You know, he drinks now, and I think they're going to be divorced. But I'm not saying this to boast. I'm saying what AA can do. And we went for a meal, and I said, no, I won't have a drink, thank you. I said, it used to cause me such problems. You know, when I had the first, I couldn't stop. And this man was listening, and he didn't say anything, but he was listening. And I said, one was too many and 1,000 too few. And I behaved in ways I hated myself, you know, wake up the next morning with a lot of shame. And yet I couldn't quite remember what I did. I said, that's all I said. And 18 months later, this young lad left. And I mean, he went back to Germany. He was German. And he said, and he sent me a Christmas card, and he said, my dad has been sober for 18 months and goes to AA in Germany. And, you know, I've got my dad back, and that's lovely. It shows how AA can spread, you know, everywhere. It really can, and it's you know, it's very special. I really am. I think Sonia's brilliant. I think she kept on much longer than me. Yeah, have we got a theme? Can we think of the theme? I've got lots of, you know, lots of experiences.
Recovery?
Pardon?
Recovery?
Yeah, recovery. That's very much a good one. And I love seeing recovery in the people in the fellowship. I love seeing their lives change. But it doesn't mean, and it didn't for me, that there'll be no problems. Because I know, you know, life is like it is, and real life comes along anyway. You know, I mean, I never would have dreamt that I'd be divorced. But now I know how God was in charge, and it was the right thing for me. And just, you know, really in the last possibly 7 years, I've had problems with my spine and was unable to walk at one time and was in a wheelchair and had a lot and lot of pain, you know, and had about 9 epidurals, lots of things physically, really difficult things. And finally had a new hip and treatment on my back and was able to, you know, to walk and stand, but not drive. And since then, you know, I can't tell you how grateful I am for the for the support and love I had, and that's what I think AA is about. But I know that I had to learn to ask, because when I was the driver, I loved giving lifts, you know, and it was a bit like I had to reverse it and say, would you mind, can you give me a lift, is that all right? And to ask was quite different. It wasn't hard, but it was different, because it had always been the other way. And I'm quite sad when groups close. I see that in Share sometimes, you know, there's a sort of big hard dot when groups close. But then I think about the ones that open, and, you know that AA has continued so well after all these years. You know, it nearly folded with the Oxford group situation, but, you know, Bill W. felt that we can't be too perfect, too pure. Alcoholics have a real problem with being too anything, perfection, hence the statement, progress, not perfection. And, you know, it's the most wonderful thing, and all the offshoots of that. Some people, I mean, Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Nicotine Anonymous, Al-Anon, wonderful Al-Anon. And I went to Al-Anon for 5 years for my son. I said, I'll stop him drinking. I can carry a good message. And all I learned to do was detach with love. And don't lecture, don't moralise, and don't scold, but don't enable. You know, they're the things that I learned in Al-Anon. And I will break my anonymity and say I've also gone to OA. And I have to say that there are times when I let the 12 steps work for me, and there are times when cakes are gorgeous, and I forget all about it. And I know, you know... But the thing was, I went to an OA meeting in Bristol with my daughter, and she works a 12-step program, which is lovely. And I don't know what happened, but this woman was sitting opposite me, and she was really slim and gorgeous. And I thought, what's she doing here? You know, I mean, sort of, I can't imagine why she's in. And she said, I used to be 24 stone, and I'm now 9 stone, and I've been 9 stone for 8 years. Well, I was up and down like a yo-yo, so it wasn't a question of, you know, she maintained that. And she said, I only maintained it by coming to meetings and working the steps. And she said, I had 5 binge foods. And she said, I had to be honest about what they were. And that for me was, you know, I thought, oh, I've got binge foods, you know. I mean, I love cream and I love cakes and I love biscuits and chocolate and kneel them off, you know, and Lurpak butter, none of the cheap fluffed up things. This is not AA now, is it? I've gone off beam. Oh, I'm so sorry. Anyway, it's another fellowship, but, you know, AA is my number one. AA was my drug of choice. Alcohol was my drug of choice. And Narcotics Anonymous, I mean, pills, I'm very, very careful, because with pain, I've had to always have less than I'm allowed. And, you know, ask my higher power on a daily basis to help me. And I really am going to stop now, because I've stopped being sensible, you know. And I think it's not fair. I'm not carrying a good message now. I do apologise. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Anne. And sorry for calling you Sonia at the beginning. Okay.
Don't worry. I like it.
But, yeah, I mean... I love what you said, and the miracle of change. I love that, yeah. That comment. You know, that was brilliant, and I love what you said about the gentleman who was a cross between Jesus and Rasputin. And you know, this thing about God of understanding as well.
Yes.
You know, that it's less rigid. I've sort of had similar experiences, so I can really relate to that. But yeah, at this. Meeting, could we practice tradition 7 before teas and coffees? And we're self-supporting through our own contributions, and we're not charging an entry fee this weekend, so please fold your change in the bucket.
Yes.